Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr, and you are listening to Fiber Talk, that twice-weekly podcast for people who make the fine art with the needle, thread, and canvas. And no Christine this week, unfortunately, because this is a milestone show for us. It's our 100th show with a guest. Now, we've done 78 or 9 Wednesday shows, but this is our 100th show with a guest. So this is pretty exciting because it's kind of a milestone. Yeah, I'll use that word again. And for our 100th show, kind enough to return to us, the person who did the first show with us, Debbie Rowley. Hi, Debbie.
Hey, Gary. How are you tonight?
Hey, I'm doing all right. Thanks for doing this.
Oh, my pleasure. See, I just hope the listeners don't get tired of hearing me.
No, they won't.
Good.
Yeah, because I was saying to Marga that when we first started this, I remember writing to you and saying, hey, we're thinking about doing this. Would you be interested? And you said yes. And then it was several months while we monkeyed around and never got to it. And then I thought, oh, now Debbie will have lost interest. But nope, you were there for the first one. So, yeah, got us off and running. And now 100 later, can't hardly believe it.
Well, you know, I think it's a tribute to you because you and Christine, because y'all have done just a fabulous job of interviewing people who are involved in our industry that we all love and producing interesting things to listen to. And, you know, a lot of us like to listen to things while we're stitching. I know I do. And recently I've been doing a lot of long distance driving.
Oh,
and you and Christine keep me company.
Excellent. Excellent. Glad to do it. Yeah, that's when I listen to most podcasts, is in the car when I have long trips. Just put them on and let them keep going. Yep.
Yep.
Yep. Excellent. Well. Yep. Yeah. So that's pretty cool. 100 of them, 100 guests. And that's, yeah, I was thinking back when we first started with you. And at the time, we were not planning to do more than 2 a month because we thought we'd run out of guests. Yeah, exactly. And it wasn't very long where we realized that we weren't going to run out of guests for a long, long time. And repeats weren't even going to be all that necessary, that we could do those because we wanted to. That, yeah, there's a ton of people. And it just seems like every few weeks I find another vein of needle workers somewhere, some type that we can tap into. And as a matter of fact, just this morning I found another, there's a magazine and a website, Fiber Arts or Fiber Artists, that is people who don't just stitch like we do, but who try to make sculptures and stuff out of fiber, and it's a whole other world. So look out.
Interesting. Oh, okay. Cool.
Look out.
Excellent.
Yeah. It was a whole different world. It was one of those things where I got to do the paying job work, but not right now.
Yeah. I'm busy. I want to look at pretty pictures.
That's right. Yes. I'm learning. Yep. So thanks for doing this. The first question I have for you is the Needle Arts Mystery Retreat.
Okay.
Is that, are we doing that again in 2019?
Yes, we are. We're going to be in the Baltimore area. And I believe that we have a link to our website, which is www.needleartsmysteryretreat.com, where you can, we'll open registration next month. We start registering January the 15th. For our Encore students, people who have previously attended any one of our Needle Arts Mystery Retreats. So, you know, if you went to one in 2007, haven't been back, but want to come back, you get to register starting January the 15th. February the 1st, we start registration for people who've never attended, so all of the newcomers. And this, I think, is going to be our 15th year?
Oh, boy.
14th year? I'm not sure. We started this kind of on a whim, and we enjoy working with each other. We enjoy our students.
Just for people who don't know, because I think this is one of the most innovative retreat concepts that there is. So for people who don't know, explain, there's 4 of you involved. Explain how this works.
Okay. So there's four teachers, Linda Rhine-Miller, Pat Hartman, and Mary Knapp, and myself. And we each design a section of the design. And then we, the four of us, collaborate on another part of the design. And so there are five sessions for the retreat. You'll have all four of us in turn for our individual sections, and then all four of us together for the combined section. So there's, you know, it's two sessions on Thursday, two sessions on Friday, one session on Saturday morning. And so it's not like where you would go to a retreat and you would take a class with a teacher. It is a single design, but you've got four different designers doing it. And our students do not see the piece until Wednesday night, when we have our welcoming reception in our, we call it the reveal, where you see what you'd be working on. People who are, you know, really terrified by this concept can look at some of our previous pieces to see what we've done in the past, and it'll give you a kind of a flavor of the kinds of things that we do. We each pick a colorway, and the students, when they register, sign up for the colorway. And it's interesting how the design looks different based depending on the colorway that you choose, but it's the same design. It's just done in four different colors.
Yep. Yep. It amazes me how four people, four talented designers with very different design approaches make this work.
Yeah, because we all have a different aesthetic. Pat likes things that have more open canvas and lighter coverage on the canvas. Mary is likes things that are more bold. Linda kind of makes stuff up as she goes along, and it's always very innovative. And, you know, my design usually for the mystery retreat is pretty similar to what I do with the rest of my designs. And so, you know, there will be open canvas. So if you're disturbed by open canvas, this may not be the retreat for you, because the canvas color is a part of the design.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yep. And what you have, there's one person who does it different every time. As I recall, there was one person there that every time has been a regular anyway, and just doesn't follow the pattern.
Oh, yeah.
The colors,
You know, she'll take some of the, one year she did all of our sections in our chosen colors. So she had all four of the colorways on her canvas. Another year she just took elements of the canvas, of the design, and mixed them up and rearranged them and, you know, just did her own thing. And so she comes, she doesn't stitch at the retreat because she's thinking, and, we always love to see what she's come up with. We encourage our students to be innovative, to not do exactly what we've done, you know, to use a different color, to use a different thread, to change the colors if they want to. And we always have students who do that. They'll take an element, you know, like next year I've selected a colorway that will be yellow, orange, hot pink, and magenta.
Holy smokes. On
white canvas.
Oh,
and
geez.
There might be somebody that would decide, okay, I want to do these, but instead of magenta, I'm going to use lime green.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we'll tell them these are the threads that I'm using, and they'll get all of the threads that I've selected, but then they can bring their own threads to add in.
Yep. Well, and I bring that up just so people know that, yeah, it's not one of those where you have to just parrot back what's been designed.
No. We don't. We encourage them to change things. You know, if there's an element in one of the designs that you don't like, change it and do something different. We always have students who do that too.
Yes. Yeah, I just really think it's really just a neat approach, and it really lets people be their own stitcher and really have flexibility. But also, if they just want to fall back into a safe zone, it's there.
Yes, and, yeah. Absolutely. And, you know, we write excellent instructions. Of course, I use my videos. I do video stitch demonstrations, and people can take the links after the retreat is over and review my stitches at least as many times as they need to. And we're always available by email for questions and to provide help and support. So, yeah, we're real hands-on with our students. We eat breakfast together. We eat lunch together. We eat dinner together. We stitch together in the evening. It's not a retreat where the teachers are off doing their own thing and you never see them except in class.
Mm-hmm. And then you usually have a store that is attached.
I'll be setting up a shop visit. There are a couple of possibilities, and you know, I don't want to say which one because I haven't talked to them yet. But we always try to do a shop visit where the retailer is open after hours just for us, and we drop a ton of cash on them.
Yeah, so, they usually don't have a problem with that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I bring that up because just for particularly for needlepoint people, yeah, if you're looking for an affordable, approachable weekend away where you can really get some good experience and just enjoy unique design, stitching, and flexibility, I just really think it's just one of the best ideas that there is. And so that's why I wanted to start with that and make sure we got it in, because that's I just think it's really innovative. And how you folks make it work is amazing to me every time. So
well, next year our Needle Arts Mystery Retreat teachers are doing the ANG Stitch of the Month.
Oh.
And we're doing it as a mystery, so you'll see the January, and you won't see the rest of it. Until February, and then you'll see February, and then you'll see March.
So next year we can get a double dose of you guys. Okay.
Absolutely.
Outstanding. So that starts in January on the ANG site then?
Yes, on the ANG website.
Yeah. So got to join ANG then.
Or are they making it? I know that some of the Stitch of the Month is public. I think that the, they always have one from the archives that's public for anybody. And then I think that the current one is also public for anybody. You don't have to join in order to access it. I'm not sure. They've recently made some changes to the website at the request of members. So
yeah, I have to say, I have not bothered to keep up, but, so anyway, if you're interested in doing this, go to ang.org and look for
needlepoint. It's needlepoint.org.
Oh, it is needlepoint.org. Yes. You're right.
Needlepoint.org.
Needlepoint.org, and look for Stitch of the Month. And if it's available, you're in. If not,
that's right.
You'll have to join.
That's right. And you'll see 1 month at a time. And the first month, I think we tell you what threads we used so that you can acquire the threads that you want, make changes to the colors. And we very purposefully used DMC floss, DMC pearl cotton, DMC satin floss, and Krynek braid.
Oh, so very approachable thread-wise.
Very approachable, no over dyes, nothing that would have to be purchased at a specialty store. Although we love our specialty store, but the Stitch of the Month remain in the archives for a long, long time. And so somebody 15 years from now may decide that, they want to do that project, and hopefully they'll still be able to find DMC floss and pearl cotton and satin floss and Krynek braid. So,
yeah, if they can't find that many years from now, then something drastic has happened. So, yes.
And nobody will be doing the Stitch of the Month anyway.
That's right. That's exactly right. Well, that's terrific. Now I got to look into this here. I need another project because, I only have like 50. So,
in this one, you'll know the canvas size, and you could do the 1 month and then put it aside and wait for the next month to come out and do that one and then put it aside. I mean, you could probably do these in, 1-2 hour bites of time.
Oh, really? See, that I can pull off.
Yeah. And then, at the end of the year, you have a whole project that you've done, but you've only done it, a couple hours at a time.
All right. If you can do it in 2 hours, I can pull off. Yep.
Okay. Now I'm not going to guarantee that because, you know, some of them will take a little bit less and some of them will take longer depending upon if you have any counting errors or things like that.
And yeah. Well, I never do that. So,
responsible for counting mistakes.
I'll knock it out in 2 hours then because I never make errors.
Mm-mm. Okay, good.
No. Tight all the way across. Nope. Never have to pull a thread out. Nothing. Nope. A lot of talent here. A lot of talent.
Well, that's extraordinary.
Well, I'm humble, but it's just fact, Debbie. It's just fact. You know, just I just am like that, you know. Just,
well, that's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. As I'm sitting here looking at the glitz and glamour opal with the Jessicas, minuscule Jessicas. And yeah, I've redone some of these several times. Yeah, there are a couple times I have just been convinced in working on this that you're evil.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm so sorry.
No, I this, you know, I've talked about this several times, and it's just because I'm absolutely hung up on it. And as I've said before, it was given to me as a kit, and they are not colors I would normally use because they're very delicate. Light bluish and whites and off-whites and that kind of thing.
And, like an opal.
Yes, which, hence the name. Boy, you are, I tell you, there must have been a long meeting for that one.
Yes, I'm on top of this.
Yes. But so it's just not my deal.
Right.
But the stitches are, in your typical approach, a nice challenge, and everything is small. So that adds that extra challenge to me to get it right on a small basis, even though I know that from a normal viewing angle, it would be hard to see errors.
Right.
Or looseness or extra tightness or whatever. It's just a nice challenge under the magnifier. Can I get it perfect at that small size?
Well, you know, and these are some shiny threads
that
reflect the light. And so I find that the shiny threads, well, except for neon rays, which is a ribbon and it's different, but I find that the shiny threads are sometimes a little bit more forgiving on tension and any little mistake that you might make. The shiny threads sometimes are because of the way they reflect the light.
Yeah. Yeah. There is some of that. There is some of that. You can get away with some things, but I'm trying mm-hmm. not to. I really am.
Well, just remember the most important thing about stitching is to enjoy it.
Yeah, well, I am.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Then rip away.
Yeah. Well, there's not been a single error so far.
Oh, good.
Today, but I didn't stitch today. So that's how that works. But the ones that, and see, this is the other thing, as I think I said last week in the Wednesday show, that this one is making me, as soon as I get far enough along, is making me, I'm going to get the serious camera and tripod and macro lens out.
Okay.
Because when I look at it, there are several areas in this thing that I think make nice images.
Oh, okay.
Where I can pull out just a small area with a macro lens.
Mm-hmm.
And make nice images like this one where you use the fireworks 16th inch metallic ribbon and then do an oblong Jessica around it.
Mm-hmm.
And that ribbon overlays so it gives that nice solid sparkly background in the center. And I every time I stitch those, and I've done three of them, so that means I got nine more to go. It was just wow, that really works. Because I just love the combination.
Well, and, you know, the thing about a Jessica is that because it is can be open in the middle, it lends itself to a filling of some kind. And so I like the filling of a ribbon. Did I use a Rhodes stitch?
Yes.
Okay, so it's kind of mailed up in the middle.
Not in these oblongs. It's just a straight satin.
Okay.
Stitch, but then in the Jessica, the round Jessicas, then you used a square Smyrna.
Uh-huh.
And it was, you used a double cross in the smaller Jessicas, and then you used a square Smyrna in the middle of the petite frosty rays. And this is unfair, folks, because Debbie did this in 2011, and Yeah, she's done a million of them since then. So it's like memories that she probably doesn't have. But the cool thing that happened is I brought this upstairs for the recording so I could have a visual thing to look at. And the Jessicas, the round Jessicas that are done in the Dinky Dye Silk Pearl, in the center is this a Frosty Rays Smyrna, Grand Smyrna, you call it, but it's a Smyrna. And when I brought it up and got it into different light, the end result of that is it looks like there's a little jewel in the center of the Jessicas.
Uh-huh.
It caught the light just right, and I thought, wow, did not see that under my magnifier.
Well, you know, so Linda Rhine-Miller says that a good design should give an overall impression, but then as you look at it more closely, you should see something new. And when you look at it a second or a third time, you should see something new yet again. So evidently, I have done a good design.
Well, yes. Yeah. Well, and she's right. She's right. And you have, and, you know, not just sucking up to you, but that's exactly what has happened. And it's visually that has happened, but also from a stitching perspective, there's so much variety going on here.
Well, you know, yeah. As a stitcher myself, I like variety. I like, I very seldom cross stitch anymore because it's the same stitch over and over again.
Right.
I also don't basket weave because here again, same thing over and over again. Now, this is not to be negative toward people who like to do that, because I've seen some absolutely stunning pieces that were all basket weave and some absolutely gorgeous cross stitch pieces. And that's fine. It's just, for me, I like the variety of doing a lot of different kinds of stitches using a lot of different textures of threads. So, you know, I designed it for me.
Well,
the
and
kind
that's
of
the
thing that I like.
That's the other thing, is the texture that is built into this, is because there's some stitches that are pretty high in terms of physical height off the canvas. And there's all kinds of texture, and it's interesting. And this is where I'm exploring as I go along, because there's a lot of open canvas, and
right.
you give an option to use a silk, a three strand silk, to fill in between all of the elements, if you want to cover the canvas.
Right.
And so when I looked at this, I thought, I think I want to do that because I think visually it will tie everything together.
Uh huh.
And then I thought, because there's a lot of places where it's just a tent stitch, because that's all the room there is.
Yeah, that's all the room there is.
Yeah. Do I want to lay three strands through this whole thing? And that's one of the moments where I thought you were just evil. So I got out a number 8 pearl, white, just white number 8 pearl, just DMC, and did a section with that. And I'm not sure. See, it's an interesting thing because that adds another texture to a very textural piece.
Right.
Where a laid silk just gives a smooth background. And you even note in the instructions to make sure that if you fill in whatever you use, that it recedes.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, if you were to use like one of the overdyed silks, then it would add to the illusion of an opal that changes color as you look at it, as opposed to using just a solid color.
Yes. Okay. So, yes. So, see, that's what I'm working on. So, I did a little section that I could just look at as I'm stitching along.
Mm-hmm.
And then my thought was, all right, then I'm going to go back and use the silk, because I have the silk that you prescribed, and do a section of that just to see as a comparison. So now I have a third option.
Right.
Yeah. So I got it, because it just seems like it would be nice to fill it in, but then I can't help but think when I'm all done, maybe I'll just decide to tear all that out and leave it open. I don't know.
Well, you know, and of course, it's too late now for this, but if somebody was intrigued by the project and decided that they wanted to do it, they could always use the white opalescent canvas.
Oh, yes, yes.
And then they wouldn't have to do any background stitches. Now, I find it challenging to work on the white opalescent or the black opalescent or the eggshell with gold threads through it. I find it really difficult to find the holes.
Oh.
Now, I know that there, I think it's just I've got a lot of floaters in my vision. And so, you know, I think that I have to really focus quite a bit on that, on the canvas with those little opalescent things in it. And so for me personally, I don't like to stitch on that, but I know that there's a lot of people that just love it. And they don't have any problem with it at all. So, you know, that would be an option.
Yeah, I could see that adding a nice dimension to this. And then that would give that background without having to stitch it. Yes.
Exactly.
Yes. Yeah. So as I and as I have said I think the last couple of Wednesday shows, this is another one of those where if you look at the picture on the cover, it does not do it. It just not do it justice.
Right.
And that's one of the things photographically. That's why I want to get the camera out, because I want to play around and see if I can capture it. Capture this thing.
Right. Well, some of the texture and the shine and the color changing and the reflection of the metallics and the things like that. It's very difficult to capture in a flat photograph, which I'm sure you know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And that's just it. For your design cover, you need a functional shot. And and so that's what you provide, but
and then the further complication, so I'm going to get into some real technical stuff, and so your listeners can zone out at this point, because we as designers we get this a lot. Well, you know, the picture doesn't look anything at all like the stitched piece. Okay, so a camera and a computer monitor are RGB values for color, right, and a printer is CYMK,
right?
And so it's really difficult. You know, we can have the most stunning, gorgeous picture in our monitor, in the camera, and then when it's printed, we're going, what happened?
Yep.
Because the printer cannot interpret the color the way that a computer monitor or camera can.
No.
So just, you know, a little explanation. It's not that we're not trying. We try really, really hard to get a good picture that will print well. We're not always successful.
No, but that, yeah, the technology gets in the way, or lack thereof. And, and also with these threads that we're using these days, there are so many subtleties.
Yes.
That are all changed at any moment by the light change.
Yes.
And to capture that, I mean, I would suggest that if you shot the same thing with the same setup, at six times throughout the day, people would swear there were five or six different designs.
Yeah.
Because you just can't capture that.
Yeah.
And that's the fun thing about the threads is we have that kind of variety. So.
Yes.
And that's why we do the threads and look at those rather than a picture. Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah. But it's just one of those things. And then what this glitz and glamour thing, and you've got, I don't know how many of those you have, but that series
is 22 or 23 of them.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I have to say, I took a moment one day when I was watching a football game and didn't want to stitch, and went to the website and just started poking around at all the others, because they're just, 5 3/4 inch? Yeah.
Yeah, they're about 6 inches square, so they, you know, would fit very nicely in a box top.
Yep.
But I don't know that they would be appropriate for a box top because of the threads that I very deliberately selected. Silk and metallic threads and rayon only. There's no cotton in any of these. So you know that silk and rayons have a tendency to snag.
Yes.
Just can't help it. That's just the way it is. Yes. And so if you were to put something, you know, one of these into a box top or for a pillow or something that would get handling, it might snag. So I'd be really cautious about that. But yeah.
Yeah, and grease up your hands before you stitch these two, because holy smokes. Yeah.
Okay, O'Keefe's working hands. going to just put in a little.
What is it? O'Keefe's now?
O'Keefe's Working Hands.
E-E-K-E-E-F-E-S?
O apostrophe K-E-E-F-E-S.
Working and Hands.
Working Hands. My fingers have a tendency to peel, and I've started using that, and that has all gone away.
Okay, this is good because it's now wintertime where we're at, and Marga's hands crack.
Yes.
And to the point where she has to sometimes super glue the crack to stop it.
Yes. My husband has had the same issue.
Has he? Okay. And so I was actually going to do some research because everybody has their favorite stitching lotion. And I was going to do some research for her to see if one of those might help her.
Try the O'Keefe's.
Yep. Okay.
And I don't think there's an odor to it. Not that I've detected, and usually I'm pretty sensitive to that kind of thing. But they also make a lip balm for dry, cracked lips. They have something for your feet. They have something for dry skin. It's excellent.
And greaseless, so you can put it right on your hands and stitch.
Yeah.
Ha-ha.
I do. I mean, there's probably some people that would go, oh, no, I just can't put anything on your hands while you're stitching, but you know I do, so.
Yeah, the Cornhuskers is mine, and I put it right on and just before I stitch.
Yep.
And I've never had a problem with it, and that works for me. But, because Marga's already, you know, super glue comes out, and it's like, man, this can't be.
My husband has had some problems with his fingers cracking and peeling and stuff, and, you know, just hurts. It hurts me.
Yeah.
See that, how painful it must be. And so he uses the O'Keefe's as well.
And that took care of it for him too.
Takes care of it. Yep.
All right. O'Keefe's Working Hands. There it is right there. Thank you. Be ordering up some, I assume. I assume available from the usual sources.
Yes, available from the usual sources. You can find some O'Keefe's products in like Walgreens, CVS and things like that. I was unsuccessful searching for them here. I was particularly looking for the lip balm and couldn't find it. So I ordered a package from Amazon that had lip balm, working hands, healthy feet, and dry skin lotion. Had all four of them.
A combo pack.
A combo pack.
A whole body combo pack. Think about that.
Yes. And in fact, it had two lip balms in it. One was menthol flavored and one was unflavored. So
there we go.
There you go.
All right, folks. There you have it right there. Mm-hmm.
And I wish I would get a royalty for mentioning them, but I don't. So,
oh, well,
just passing it along from one stitcher to another.
Yep. Yeah. And then, of course, at this time of year, everybody in the Southern Hemisphere is going, oh, man, I'm just trying to keep my hands from sweating. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
Okay, that's O'Keefe's Working Hands. All right, got to get that on the order them up list.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Now, you have two seminar pieces coming next year.
Yes.
That, wow, Allegro and Rondo.
Right.
And so those are what? One is 3 or 4 day class, and how does that work?
I think one is 3 and one is 2. I think the Allegro is a 3 day class and the Rondo is a 2 day class.
Yeah.
I think that's how they're, you know, you can go to needlepoint.org, look at the seminar, which is in Houston this year, and find out all the information about those two classes.
But now I looked at those and yes, do that. But I looked at those two designs and they're along the lines of your typical, but they're not. They seem to be a different dimension.
Oh, really?
Well, it struck me that way. Like
okay.
maybe more complex.
I don't know.
This is just dumb guy questions, just based on pictures.
Yeah, I don't know if they're more complex or not. Allegro, it has a double fan doubled around a double fan doubled in the center of it. And I've been intrigued by that stitch ever since I saw a picture of it on Facebook somewhere and got out my Jean Hilton books and looked it up and saw how to do it. And so I've been intrigued by that. And then so that was the start of that one. And then I just put stitches that I like around it.
Okay, well, all right, I'm going to stop you right there. Because that was the other part I was wondering. Because I mean, I own several of yours. I've stitched a few of them, and how is it that you get started? So on this one, you had a stitch that you wanted to be the focal point,
right?
And then you built, so you put that stitch in and built around it. So color didn't really matter, other than you had to have a combination that would work.
Right. You know, for that particular design, and for most of my designs, I do everything in black and white, and then I try to find a color combination that sings to me. And so I'll use that for the color combination.
Okay. So it literally is the black and white. So you take the photographer's approach then, which is because that's the toughest thing in photography, is if you can do good black and white, colors secondary.
Oh, okay.
Oh, well, it is. You know, they say if you want to learn, I mean, and that's the way I was taught, that's the way I learned, but if you want to learn photography, shoot black and white. And then, because that forces you to understand contrast and light.
Right. And shadows and foreground and background.
Right.
Well, and
because color hides a lot of that.
It does. And one of the things that I think people find attractive about my designs is they can change the colors.
Right.
Because color was not an essential part of the design to begin with. And so because it was not the driving force behind the design, any color will work. And so you can work in, you know, whatever color combination you want.
Yeah. See, that helps me understand the underlying, because I just find your designs fascinating in their overall structure. And that, so now that helps me understand. And I guess that you probably said it before and it just never locked into me that you're doing a black and white piece. So you're setting up texture and lines and flow in black and white. And then whatever color, doesn't matter. It's going to hold up.
Right. And I'm working on a series now that hopefully I'll be proposing for seminars, that they're all the same size. They're all 4 inches wide by 12 inches long. That's the design size.
Mm-hmm.
One is mostly Walnettos, mostly Jessicas, mostly Amadeus, mostly, what's the third one? Mostly Crescents. Okay. And then the fifth one, there's going to be a fifth one that's going to be called Fandango, and it's going to be fans, double fan doubled, double fan doubled, around a double fan doubled. But I'm doing these in four color combinations. And so if you wanted to take the class and you wanted to take like one of the color combinations is grayscale with a red accent. Well, you could do all five of them in the grayscale with a red accent.
Uh-huh.
Another color combination that I'm doing is a monochromatic beiges and beige to brown. And another one is I picked a bold color scheme that's turquoise, orange, and purple. And then the fourth one is a pastel color scheme, pale pink, pale yellow, lilac, pale blue on an antique blue background. So because I've designed them in black and white, the colors are going to work. And so regardless of the design, so because I know that not everybody likes ecru de beige in brown. I mean, I get that. And other people would look at the bold colorway and go, ooh, and it gives them the willies to look at orange and purple and turquoise together. Oh my gosh. But, you know, there's an equal number of people that would never want to do anything with pastel colors.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I'm trying to approach this so that you can stitch a design, an interesting design, in colors that you like, because if you don't like the colors, you won't stitch the piece.
Right.
You should always work with colors that you like.
Yes. Agreed. Though interesting, in this opal thing, they're not colors I much care for, but I'm still having a great time.
They're not colors I much care for either.
I'm still having a great time. I don't care.
Good.
Is it, and that was another question I had that has come to my head as I'm stitching this opal thing. Is it harder to work with pastels and pale colors than more solid, more bold colors? Is it harder to put those together or does it just really not matter?
Well, you know, for me, it is not harder. I've done, you know, quite a few things that are just all one color. All of the glitz and glamours, for the most part, are all one color. So sapphire is all blue. Ruby is all red.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and, you know, so I have opal and I have aquamarine, which is, you know, that nice pale aqua color. Citrine was the hardest for me to do because I don't like yellow and it's all yellow.
Yeah, so, every time I see that one, I get a chuckle because, you've mentioned more than once you don't like yellow. And I just thought, why just did like you?
Well, someone asked me to do citrine because that was their birthstone and they wanted to do their birthstone. So, you know, not all of these are birthstones, but I started with my birthstone, which is sapphire.
Yeah.
Because I think it is obviously the most beautiful gemstone.
Yes, of course. Yes.
Because it's blue.
Yeah, well, that's probably my next one because blue is my favorite color, even though it has, I don't even know what my birthstone is, have no idea, but blue is my favorite color, so.
When's your birthday?
February.
Okay, your birthstone is amethyst.
Okay. Now I have to look it up and see what it looks like.
It's a dark purple.
Oh, well, that ain't so bad.
No, that's not so bad.
Yeah. Side story on Ruby. Marg and I in August celebrated 40 years. And so it was, you know, I need to get her something.
It's a Ruby.
Yeah. And I was talking to somebody on a business trip, a young lady. And I said, you know, it just came up. And I said, yeah, I don't know what to get. She says, well, what about the stone? What is 40 years in the, you know, paper, cotton, all that stuff? And I don't know, you know, what do I know? And she says, so we look it up, Ruby. And I said, okay, I'll do that. So I'll get her a Ruby pendant or something, necklace, jewelry. So this will ever stick with me. So I go to websites and it's all this cultured rubies.
Mm-hmm.
Cultured. Well, this is
synthetic.
This is our 40th anniversary. I'm not buying cultured. I want the real thing.
Right.
And I scroll down. Holy smokes. I went back to cultured so fast to make your head spin. Real rubies are expensive. Man.
Yeah.
See, I never knew.
Rod got me an absolutely stunning sapphire and diamond ring 1 year for our anniversary. And they were trying to sell him synthetic sapphires, and he said, nope, my wife is not synthetic. I want the real thing. So I have real, and they said, oh, but they don't wear as well and blah, blah, and they're not as hard and, you know, she could damage it. And he goes, I'll take that chance.
Yep. Well, hey, yeah. But that, yeah. So no, she got cultured ruby, but the cultured ruby was a brighter, shinier red too.
Yes. Well, you know, and I have learned since I started doing, you know, I go to a gemstone website for inspiration.
And oh, so, do you? Okay.
Yeah. So the structure of the opals came about because when I was looking up opal, there was a picture of a whole bunch of opals laying together, round and oval. And I thought, oh, okay, I'll do that. And so I used that picture as an inspiration for the design and the layout. I have learned that sapphires are not just blue, which is mind-blowing to me. They can come in green or pink or white in addition to blue.
Mm.
And it has to do with the hardness of the, you know, because I'm like, how would you know it was a white sapphire and not a diamond?
Yeah.
And it has to do with the hardness of the gemstone. So, you know, there's a scale that jewelers use. And so that's why it's a green sapphire and not an emerald.
Huh.
Or a pink sapphire and not a different pink stone. So, yeah.
The things we learn.
The things we learn.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, real rubies. Mm-mm. Whoa. Whoa.
Well, that just depends on how big they are, too.
Whoa. Yeah, but these were little chips. And it was like, holy smokes, folks. Get a grip. Yeah, I didn't realize. And then, of course, the first time I didn't believe it. So right. I went doing more research, and then I found places where it was even worse. It's like, okay, yeah. Uncle, I got. Oh
yeah,
it.
You can find. Yeah, don't ever go to the Tiffany website. I'm just telling
oh,
you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, my daughter tried that one for me because I was asking for her help.
Yeah. Yeah.
And immediately she comes back with a link to Tiffany. I just, Sarah, just go away.
So
away.
We're not doing that. As much as, you know, it would be so nice to get that little blue box. That would be awesome.
Yeah.
But not, you know, we're trying to build a house. There's no way.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Food tonight would be great. So no.
Yes. Gas for the car.
Yep.
Yeah.
A question I asked Mary Corbett a couple weeks ago, because it hit me. And so now I think I'm probably going to ask a bunch of people this.
Okay.
So I'm stitching away the other day. Well, now 2 or 3 weeks ago, it doesn't really matter. I love that thing where it must come with age, where you want to pinpoint exactly when it was, and it really isn't relevant. So at some point in the recent past, when I was stitching, I have 4 scissors in my rack next to my stand, or, you know, this is attached to my stand. And okay. I have, I don't know, 3 or 4 laying tools of different lengths right. and whatever. And I noticed that I have a Dovo scissor, and then there's an Italian one that Mary Corbett talked me into buying through her thing. And I noticed that I pick those up all the time, and the Dovos are the ones that I pick up more than that. And I thought, you know, I wonder, you know, here I've got 4 different scissors, all, you know, equally good.
Right.
And I end up with that one all the time. That's the one I grab. And then I have a laying tool. Now, my favorite laying tool is my best, the BLT, the metal one.
Right.
Because it's narrow and I can, you know, it's so long and pointy, but it's not too long. Because I have some really long ones. Like I have one of those porcupine quill ones. Those things, I bought it as just a habit, but that's ridiculous for laying. It's just, I feel like my hand is 5 feet from the thing, you know.
Yeah, but, I have a glass one too,
Yeah, I just can't work with it. But so I have this little thing, it's like 3 inches long, just a little wood one that I had made that fits in my hand. So I can have it in my hand while I'm stitching. And it doesn't protrude, and then it's there. And I know you have that thumb thing.
Right.
That I still want one. but the question was, why, you know, I migrate toward this scissor and this laying tool, yet I have many options.
Mm-hmm.
Do you do that? Do you find that you, because you must have over the years accumulated several things.
Oh, yes. Accumulated and lost.
Okay. That part.
Yeah. And so then I go accumulate more. Yeah. I've got a whole bunch of different scissors that I use for different things. I have some of those really cute little ones. I don't know if you've seen them, but they're like neon pink or green.
Oh, yes. Yes.
And they have the little, and you know, the blade is about a half inch long.
Yeah. Yeah.
I take those with me when I'm flying because they were cheap. And I don't care if they get confiscated, but they should meet the TSA requirements without any difficulty. So I've got a couple of pairs of those. I've got Adovos. I've got Gingers. I've got, you know, scissors that I picked up at Walmart because I was stitching and somewhere and somehow or another didn't have a pair of scissors. So I went and picked up a pair. And so, you know, at any given time, I have 8 to 10 pairs of scissors right beside me.
Uh-huh.
Now, the ones that I use the most, I use my Dovos and my metallic scissors the most.
Okay.
The metallic scissors have a serrated edge so that it doesn't damage the blade when you're cutting your metallics.
Okay, hold that thought because I have a question about that. So, come back to that one.
Okay. And so I use, you know, for the most part, I use my Dovos. When I'm cutting, you know, just regular thread, ribbon, I also have one of the thread zapper that I use when I'm using flare or frosty rays or something like that, because it seals the end and it doesn't unravel as badly. Mm-hmm. And so I have that. And then, I have my metallic scissors. At any given time, I've got, like currently by my stitching station right now, I've got 3 pairs of scissors within easy reach.
Mm-hmm. But then, of course, and that's, yeah, of course, this question isn't going to work as well for you because you use so many different threads.
Right.
And because, like, I have a pair of beater scissors that I use for Krynek and those kinds of things just mm-hmm. because then I don't care.
Right.
So for you, it's almost essential that you have three or four because of the different threads you're using in any given design.
Yeah, pretty much.
But then is there one that in general you keep going back to? Is it the Dovo?
Yeah. Yeah, that's the one I use the most.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the dogs knock them off the couch and I can't find them, so I have to go buy another pair.
Well, your dogs, try looking in their fur.
Yeah.
Just try that. You might find some.
Yeah, I might. Well, and our last Sheltie, not either of our current Shelties, but our last Sheltie, I swear, took a pair of gingers, a very expensive pair of ginger and pointer scissors out in the backyard, and we never found them.
Oh, no.
Never found them. And, you know, we've replaced our couch two or three times. And, you know, when we pick the couch up, oh, there's four pairs of scissors under the couch, two or three skeins of thread and several needles and other things that I've lost.
Rod must just roll his eyes.
Well, you know, I am not going to spend time looking for a needle when I've got 40 needles right beside me.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, it's just gone.
Yep.
So I'll find it eventually. As long as it's not where the dog is going to step on it, I'm okay.
Yep. Yeah. And wear shoes in the stitching area. You're fine.
Well, yeah. You know, we replaced our carpet with a laminate flooring. And so I find myself wearing slippers all the time anyway.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. The other day I was walking up to the sun was coming in the window and I was walking up to my stitching stand and there was a shine on the floor mm-hmm. In the carpet. What's that down there? It was a needle. I didn't realize I'd lost it.
Yeah. 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 I find needles in a lot of places.
Yeah. 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 Usually when I drop one of those things, man, I freak out because I don't want one to end up in my foot.
Oh, no, no. Yeah. That's not a good thing. Yep. They are blunt, but they will still penetrate quite easily.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. They will. So that's okay. So you do the same thing then. Because your laying tool is that thumb thing.
Yes.
That's just automatic for you.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I have others.
I'm sure you do. So do you like short laying tools or long ones?
I like the one that's on my finger. The technical term is a trolley needle. I like a trolley needle because I don't have to hold it. And I experience a lot of hand fatigue from holding my hand in the same position. So holding a laying tool would set up hand fatigue and cramping, which means that I would not be able to stitch as long. So the trolley needle, because it fits on my finger, I don't have to hold it.
Yeah,
and so it
doesn't
cause any fatigue.
Well, and that it's there automatically. That's what this short one is for me. It's in my hand. And it's there automatically.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I don't. And that's, you know, that's interesting because, you know, I wonder about people like you who stitch all the time. At some point, yeah, your hands have to start showing the signs of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you have to be careful. You take a lot of breaks.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Because we read about it in Facebook groups all the time. People saying my shoulders bother me. My arm's going numb.
Yeah, my shoulder was bothering me so much over Thanksgiving, I had to go get a shot in it.
Ooh.
And I'm now doing physical therapy for my shoulder, which I'm not real sure that it's helping. But, you know, the doctor said physical therapy two times a week for 6 weeks. So, okay, I'll go.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, you got to do whatever it is because that's your livelihood. That's what you do. And if you lose the ability to do that, then, yeah, there you are.
Yep.
Yep. Oh, man. So far, no problems for me, but I don't stitch nearly as much as you do.
Well, it's a common misconception that designers stitch all the time. We don't.
No, but you stitch a lot, right?
I stitch a lot.
Stitch a lot, yeah. So.
Not as much as I would like to, but, you know, there's always things that have to be done for the business.
Right, Right.
So, you know, I get the comment, oh, I would love to be a designer and I could stay home and stitch all day. And I'm just like, I don't know any designers that stay home and stitch all day. I'm sorry. That's like people who tell their retailer, oh, I wish I could be a shop owner and I could just sit and stitch all day. My retailer very seldom gets a chance to sit and stitch. She's always, you know, she's got to enter inventory and get a picture of it and put it on the website and point of sale and chase stuff down and fill an order for, you know, an online order for somebody. I mean, she's always busy.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Well, then that's, I mean, that's standard thing for people who make a business out of their hobby. Yep.
That's right.
Yep. You lose the time to do the hobby because you got to do the business.
Right.
And
that's
you can't
right.
let the business slide. It can't slide.
No.
Yeah. Yeah, that's like you. I mean, you're designing effectively 2 years in advance. You got to keep going. Yep.
Yes.
Yeah. Are you, I mean, you've done an awful lot of designs. Are you at a point, you know, and I go back to the conversation with Trish Burr, where she is backing off of her retail work because she wants to have more time to stitch and design. And she said, because there's design work that is above and beyond what she's doing that she wants time to develop. Are you at a point now where you're looking for, say, a new level in design? Or have you not exhausted what you're doing?
Well, there's always things that I want to do. It's just a matter of prioritizing time to do the things that will be the most meaningful or the most productive. So, I have embarked on the A&G Master Teacher Program. I'm just getting started with it. And partly because I am wanting to see what can I learn?
Mm-hmm.
What can I learn? And how can I apply that to designing so that I'm kind of pushing the envelope a little bit, doing things differently with threads, constructing things. I mean, there's a piece that I have been fiddling with for a couple of years, and I can't quite work out the mechanics of how to make it work. And so, you know, I'm thinking about that and how can I do that so that a student won't be super frustrated because they didn't get to do the construction part of it in class and, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So that is another dimension then.
Yeah.
Yeah. And having the time and like you said, just to focus on that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, I just always wonder because, I mean, even your stuff has some complexity to it, but I always have to think that at some point you're going, boy, okay, I can do this. Can I do this? Can I find this next level?
Yeah, and, you know, I don't want to lose my voice. You know,
right.
I want someone to be able to look at a piece and go, oh, I think that Debbie Rowley designed that. And so, you know, I don't want to be so bizarre that I lose my, that people can't tell that it's me, but there are things I can do and, that would add to what I'm already doing or approach it in a different way. I don't know if that makes any sense
or
not.
It does.
You know,
cause
I'm always wanting to do something different because, you know, I need to challenge myself as a stitcher as well.
Right. Cause see, I liken it to, a singer or, you know, a musical artist who does, say, rock, and somewhere along the way, I want to do a country album just to see what that's like.
Yeah.
I just want to, you know, branch out, or I want to do classical music just because I want to see how that's, you know, I just want to try it.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I wonder if you get to that point too, where I just want to try this over here that, yeah, I appreciate you want to keep your voice, but also I just want to stretch out here and see what happens.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, just to, I'm sure that, you know, a stitcher who has stitched for a number of years and we hear this a lot, I don't have any more room on my walls.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, I'm not an end result stitcher. I'm a process stitcher. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So I will continue to stitch whether I put it on the walls or not, just because I want to be stitching and I want to always be doing. But there are some who think, well, if I'm going to spend time doing this, I need to have a finished project.
Mm-hmm.
And I, yeah, maybe you do, maybe you don't.
Yeah. See, and I'm more along your lines, because I did that with, well, I don't do nearly the photography that I used to do, but I was the same way with photography.
Mm-hmm.
It was the process of capturing the image and, you know, in this session, how close could I get to an image where there was no flaws or where that,
yeah,
nothing that bothered me.
Right.
And then, and people say, well, what do you do with all those images? Well, I can tell you what I did with them. They're all in on CDs and DVDs in a cabinet, horribly labeled, and haven't been out for a long time because I really just don't care.
Right.
About
you
printing
don't need,
a picture.
You don't need to look at the picture.
No.
You remember the experience of how you set it up,
right,
and the feel that you were trying to capture and the technical things that you needed to do to try to get that. And so, yeah.
Right. That's exactly what happened. And when I was on stitching on the way home from Germany, one of the flight attendants, what are you going to do with that? And my response is, whatever my wife wants to do with it, I don't really care.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And, you know, these people who can't afford to finish or frame or whatever, and they want to continue stitching, well, you know, put it in a Rubbermaid tub and stick it under your bed.
Yeah.
You know, just enjoy the process of stitching and working with this particular thread, or I learned this stitch, or I liked the way that these things interacted with each other. And just enjoy that. And there's, you know, there's people who are going to be listening to this and going, oh, I can't do that.
Yeah.
That's fine. And I understand that, you know, just like there are people that can't stitch and keep something for themselves. They always stitch and give it away.
Yeah. Yeah. That ain't happening again for me. Mm-mm.
I never give anything away.
No.
I, even when I was, before I became a designer teacher and was just stitching for myself, I never gave anything away.
No. Yeah. No. A couple of those little experiences, and it's like, no.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, what was the one flight attendant? Are you going to sell that? No.
Nope. There's not enough money.
No. And that's what I said to her. I said, I could never get enough money out of it for the effort and time. Mm-hmm. And
yeah.
And no, I'm not.
Mm-mm. And, you know, there's a lot of people that don't understand that. I got into a Facebook exchange with somebody who wanted to donate something to an auction for a charity. And, you know, people were saying, oh, yeah, people are going to spend a lot of money for that. And I said, and I came in, I was Debbie Downer. I said, no, they're not.
No,
they're not. I mean, my A&G chapter did something for the Heart Hospital for their heart auction. We had a Mindy canvas that our retailer got for us, and we only paid wholesale for it. We did not have to pay for it at retail. Then we all stitched on it with our own threads. It took several, you know, hours and hours, and we passed it around, and then we framed it. And all told, there was probably $250 in this thing. You know what it got at auction?
20? I
don't 25.
Okay. Yep.
And we all said, you know what? We would rather just donate $25 from our treasury.
Yep. Exactly.
Than to go through all the time and effort that we took and to have it professionally finished and all that. People don't appreciate what goes into it.
No.
They don't appreciate how much money it takes, you know, to buy a canvas and threads and then the framing. And then the time that you spend and the thought that goes into, you know, for a canvas,
yep,
which stitch are we going to use? And, you know, they don't get it.
Yep.
And so I'm not going to support their not getting it.
Yep. Well, but, and that's just it. Yeah. Here's $25. Leave me alone.
Yeah, exactly. And yep, I'll stitch what I want and the way that I want it, instead of thinking, oh, well, you know, I could sell this at auction and it'll get blah, blah. I mean, I've done things for charity auctions and with the understanding that it will not get near what it's worth.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I did that for a church thing. Photos. It was two or three photos, and I think we've put them in frames and everything. I think they pulled $10 a piece, and it's like, forget it, just forget it.
Yeah, I mean, because they can go to Walmart and buy a cheap picture in a frame for $5.
Right.
And so why isn't yours worth $5?
Right. Yeah. And that was before cell phones. Now, everybody's got photos, so just forget it.
Yeah.
Not worth it. Okay, we got it. Every time.
And I didn't even get to talk to you about the new thread.
Well, that's what we're going to end up on, because we got to talk about that. We're not wrapping it up here, because I got to know about thread here. So tell.
Okay.
So tell, Debbie, tell.
I designed an ornament for one of my exchanges this year, and I used the new DMC Etoile thread.
Okay.
And that's the thread that it's stranded floss that has a little bit of a metallic in with it. So it's not like the old Rainbow Gallery highlights. Okay, not like that. Although I've used highlights. Highlights has been discontinued. But this is a six strands, and it has just a very subtle sparkle. Okay, so the ornament that I did, I used this because I went, as soon as they said that they were going to have this collection, I immediately put it on order at my local shop. I want all of it. And so, of course, there was a red, there was a green, there was a white. Perfect. Wonderful for a Christmas ornament. So that's what I used. And what I liked about it was I was doing satin stitches with it, and I didn't have to lay them. Yeah.
What?
I was using three strands. And because of the way that this fiber is made, it laid perfectly.
Holy smokes.
Now, it would have laid a little bit better if I had used my laying tool, but, it's an ornament I was giving away, so I didn't really care.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's kind of huge.
I was floored because, stranded floss, okay, and I get out my laying tool, got three strands, blah, blah, blah. Nope. And when you look at it in the skein, you know how when you look at a regular skein of DMC floss, how it's all very tightly woven together and you have to kind of force it apart? This you don't. And the metallic did not separate from the cotton. Like with a silk lame braid, sometimes they kind of untwist on them.
Right.
This did not. It held together beautifully.
And that was one of the questions I had for you, was how tightly the metallic is within a strand. So it's right in there, not going to be a problem.
Not going to be a problem. I didn't have any problem with it coming out.
I'll be darned. And it looks good. I mean, it's good quality cotton.
Yeah.
Wow. So this is worth a try then.
I think so. Of course I have the whole collection and it's a limited range so far, but the way it works is the color numbers go along with regular DMC numbers. Like the red that I used was C321.
Mm-hmm.
And the green was C699. So, 699 is a green, 321 is a red.
Yep.
And they, I think there's a 434 and a 3371. And, I forget how many colors there are, but there's a nice range.
Wow. Much considerably more expensive than regular or a little bit more?
See, this is going to sound really totally snotty, and I don't mean for it to sound that way. But, I tell my retailer I want the collection and I don't care how much it costs.
No, I don't think it sounds snotty at all, because I have a package coming right now as we're recording. It's on its way. And I realized after I'd ordered it, I never did ask how much. So,
I want the heart wants what the heart wants.
Right, exactly.
And it doesn't matter to me. There have been a few things where I've kind of went, oh, yikes.
Yeah.
But not very many. And, it is DMC floss after all. Like satin floss is the rayon floss, and it's, I think I was paying $1.25 a skein for that at my local shop. Mm-hmm. I think this is probably in line with that, but okay. I couldn't tell you for sure.
Well, that's not horrible. I mean, if it's in that ballpark, that's not horrible.
No, it's not horrible. For a specialty thread?
Right, right.
Not horrible at all.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I've got to give it a try.
I used it because, you know, DMC has released threads before that were only available in a collection. Well, that's useless to me as a designer.
Yeah.
So the satin floss, they made that available as, you know, where you could buy a box of that. And so, you know, it's easy to stock in. The new colors that they released that are the two-digit color numbers, those are available individually, so you don't have to have those as a whole collection, although I actually have two collections of those because I ordered one from my regular shop and then couldn't wait, so I ordered one from DMC from their website. And so I'll probably wind up with two or three collections of the étoile, but the étoile is going to be available as individual boxes.
Okay.
So the retailer, you know, if they want to just do white, red, and green, they can just do white, red, and green.
Yeah. Yeah, because that's a pain in the butt for retailers.
Yeah.
Because they don't want all those colors and not everybody does. But yeah, I can imagine for you, it's like nice threads. Can I get two skeins of something, please?
Yeah. Or, you know, if I want to use it in a teaching project that I'm going to be I have to be able to buy the boxes, and I'm not going to be giving them a whole collection of 30-something threads, and they only need two of them.
Right. Yeah. Not helpful. Right.
No, not helpful.
Well, that's so interesting. You know,
that's always the first thing I check when a new thread is released. Can we get this?
Mm-hmm. All right. Now I got to have some. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
O'Keefe's Working Hands.
Go down to see Monica and tell her you want the étoile.
Okay. All right. Every time I do one of these, it costs me money. Every time. I'm telling you. Every time.
Well, you have to quit talking to me because I am a good one at spending other people's money.
Yes, you are. You're trouble. I will admit that.
Sorry. Yeah. Not sorry. Yeah.
No, you're not. You don't care.
Well, I do care. And usually I try.
Not your problem, Debbie.
Well, usually I try to be really aware of how much threads cost to do one of my designs.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't want it to be out of reach.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, you know, if I use a card, you know, if I'm going to put a specialty thread in, like a card of Rainbow Gallery, I'm going to use at least half of the whole card in design so that you get your money's worth. I'm not going to use 4 inches of it.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah. Thanks, Debbie. Yeah. $5 skein of thread. Yeah, you used. Yeah. Thanks. Yeah.
Yeah, and you only need 6 inches of it, you know, because, I, you know, it's just for the eyeballs for this one thing. Yeah. You know, no, I don't do that.
Yeah.
And when I'm pulling threads to stitch one of my models, if I get to the halfway point, I don't introduce new threads.
Oh, okay.
I use something that I've already used
because
I don't want the price of the kit to be out of reach.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, because that could be, that's an automatic turnoff for probably most people, yeah.
Well, yeah, you know, you have to have 40 different threads to do this little design.
Yeah.
Oh, and look, she only used this thread for this one stitch.
Yeah. Yeah. Pass.
Yeah.
Yep. Exactly.
Or, you know, you buy them all and then you're going, that's it? That's all that we used of this? Now what am I going to do with the rest of the skein? Yeah. So, you know, I try to be aware of that.
Yeah. Well, that's good. That's good. All right. We got to end. Now, we have, in recognition of the 100th show, you do an annual ornament. And now this will go up the first of the year.
Okay.
So this is going to be an ornament to have for the 2019 Christmas.
Perfect.
So plenty of time to stitch it and get it finished.
Yep.
So we're going to make this ornament. You've been kind enough to let us offer this ornament. So what we're going to do, can you tell us anything about the ornament?
Well, I use the étoile thread.
Oh, there we go.
Okay.
All right.
Now, I say all through the instructions, use any thread that you want. Change the colors if you want to. If you don't have access to the étoile, it will work just fine with regular floss. And so I think that I used fireworks. But here again, if you don't want to use that, you don't have to. And it's really simple. It's red, white, green, and gold. But there are, you know, there's a little complexity involved in it. There's several different stitches. And I think the instructions are like 18 pages.
Mm.
So, you know, it's all very step by step. So that you'll, and I tell you exactly when to do what. And I even included finishing instructions, how to make it into a flat ornament.
Okay. So everything we need.
Everything you need.
Except canvas and thread, of course. But.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, chances are you could use just stash.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, it's an ornament. So it doesn't take a whole lot, of thread, doesn't take a, you know, a big piece of canvas. And you might could even stitch it in hand, although I don't really recommend that. It's just too difficult. But,
yes.
You know, you don't need a very big piece of canvas. I think I stitched it on 8-inch stretcher bars.
Oh, okay. So we're giving that away. Now, here's how we'll do it. If you are a subscriber, if you've gone to the website, wetalkfiber.com, and filled in the subscriber form, then I will send you a link to download the chart, the whole instructions, everything. I will send you a link. You don't have to do anything because you've already subscribed and you're a listener and good to go. If you haven't, new listener, just haven't signed up at wetalkfiber.com, go to the page for this podcast, the 100th podcast with Debbie. And down at the bottom is a place to give your email address and your name. And when you do that, that puts you on the list. And all that means is you will get an email notification whenever we post something on the website. And 99% of the time, that's a notification on Wednesday and a notification on Sunday. That's it. I'm not going to hit you with a bunch of spam or advertising or anything. We don't sell your names. All it is a way to notify you when we do something on the site. So no threat of that. I had somebody the other day who subscribed and then came right back and unsubscribed. And I asked why. And she said, because I don't want to get a bunch of spam. Well, not going to happen. Number one, I don't have the time. Even if it could happen, I don't have the time. So it's just not possible. Trust me, it's not possible. So you just fill that out, little email address and name. And then I get an email every time someone subscribes. So when I get that email, then I will just use that, forward it to you with the link so you can get the ornament chart. That's how it'll work. So all you have to do, wetalkfiber.com, if you're already on our list of subscribers, if you're on our list of subscribers and never completed it, meaning you didn't answer the confirmation form, then you're not on the list. And if you unsubscribe, then you're going to have to subscribe again. Those who are, you'll automatically get the link, and then anyone new, I will do it on a one-off basis so you can get this ornament from Debbie, and we really appreciate it. That's going to be fun.
Oh, I hope so. And, you know, change the colors if you want to. It's a really relatively simple design.
Yep.
So,
and I would say, you know, for ornaments, if you enjoy Debbie's work, I have her book. You have a book of ornaments.
Yeah.
That is a fantastic book to own. I really like it.
Yeah, it's called A Canvas Christmas, and
yes.
It's got 12 ornaments in it.
Really good. So, yeah, if you like this one, want to try some others of Debbie's, yeah, there's a book right there with some really nice ones and variety. They're not all the same kind of thing. Different sizes, different threads, different designs, very great deal of variety there. Yep. Highly recommend.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, well, I don't make this up, Debbie. I just enjoy it.
It's funny because my local A&G chapter had our annual Christmas party, and we always do a stitched ornament exchange. And I got one of the ornaments that was from the Canvas Christmas.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. And I was really happy to get it because it's really I don't, all of my designs that are stitched are models. Okay. So they're not in my house. They're out doing things. They're out selling charts. And so all of the ornaments on A Canvas Christmas are hanging at the local shop right now. And so this way I have one of my own ornaments that I can put on my tree.
Yeah. Plus from someone else, you got to see how they interpreted the design. So yes,
they did it exactly as I did it.
Oh, they did. Okay.
Yes.
Great.
Which Great. Was fine.
You liked it when you did it and you liked it when you received it. Yep.
I did. And you know, I have stitched ornaments on my tree that I've gotten in ornament exchanges. When I put them out, I remember the person who stitched it. And so it's just really nice yeah. to have those ornaments.
Yeah. So anyway, there you have it, folks. If you're on the list, you'll get the ornament that in January, plenty of time to have it done for next Christmas. And if you're not, get on the list and I will send it to you. And thanks to Debbie for making that available. That's fantastic.
My pleasure.
Looking forward to stitching it myself.
Mm-hmm. Well, good.
Yes. All right. That's going to be it. Yeah, okay. I think an hour 22 for our 100th episode, that's going to be enough. Yeah.
And we only got to two or three of the things on the list that you sent to me.
Yeah, yeah, the list got shoved aside a while ago. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. As usually happens.
That means you got to come back. It's just that simple.
Well, always a delight for me to do so.
Thank you, Debbie. Thanks to everyone for listening through 100 and guest episodes, and Christine and I will be back on Wednesday.